happen, even through her breathing mask. "Aye," agreed Quinlan, thudding the blackened wall with a gloved fist. "But he built solid. Reinforced concrete. The basic structure stood up to the flames, it did." His partner reluctantly agreed. "They could have contained the fire to one area if someone hadn't allowed it to spread to the roof." Quinlan nodded. "A pity," he murmured. "A true pity." They wore the breathing masks to protect their lungs from the fine ash that they kicked up with each step they took. The grotto had been refilled with breathable air hours earlier. Quinlan and his Finnish partner were inspecting the ruins, checking to make certain that no hint of fire reignited itself now that there was oxygen to support combustion again. They spent a careful hour sifting through the debris of the lower floor. Then they headed cautiously up the stairs to the upper level. The wooden facings and lush carpeting of the stairway had burned away, but the solid concrete understructure was undisturbed by the fire. Upstairs was just as bad a mess as below. Quinlan could see the broken and charred remains of what had once been fine furniture now lying in shattered heaps along the walls of the hallway. The windows were all intact, he noticed, and covered with metal mesh screens. "He must have built with tempered glass," Quinlan thought. "Bulletproof? I wonder." Following the floor plan displayed on their handhelds, they pushed through the debris at the wide doorway of the master bedroom suite. Quinlan whistled softly at the size of it all. "That must have been the bed," his partner said, pointing to a square block of debris on the floor. "Or his airport," muttered Quinlan. "Hey, look at this." The Finn was standing in front of an intact door panel. "The fire didn't damage this." "How could that be?" Quinlan wondered aloud, stepping over toward her. "It's plastic of some sort," she said, running her gloved hand along the panel. "Ceramic, looks like." The redhead checked her handheld. "Should be a closet, according to the floor plan. How in the world do you get into it, though?" Quinlan looked for a door latch or a button, but could see nothing along the soot-blackened door frame. He tried to slide the door open. It wouldn't budge. He tapped it, then rapped. "It's locked from the inside, seems like." At that instant, the door slid open so fast they both jumped back a startled step or two. Martin Humphrey stood tottering on uncertain legs, glaring at them with red-rimmed blazing in his eyes.
"About time," he croaked, his voice bricky dry.
"Mr. Humphreys!" Humphrey staggered past them, looked at the ruins of his palatial bedroom, then turned back on them fiercely.
"Water. Give me water."
Quinlan yanked the canteen from his belt and wordlessly handed it to the angry man. Humphreys gurgled it down greedily, water spilling down his chin and dripping onto the front of his wrinkled shirt. Even through the breathing mask, Quinlan could smell the man's foul body odor. Humphreys put the canteen down from his lips, but still held onto it possessively. Wiping his chin with the back of his free hand, he coughed once, then jabbed a finger at Quinlan.
"Phone,"
he snapped, his voice a little stronger than before.
"Give me a phone. I'm going to hang that murdering bastard Fuchs by his balls."
Asteroid Vesta. Although the military base on Vesta belonged to Humphrey's space systems, its key personnel were mercenaries, hired by HSS from several sources. Lisa Schopthal, for example, was a Yamagata Corporation employee. She was now effectively the base commander, since the HSS man nominally in charge of the base was a business executive, by training and education an accountant, by disposition a bean counter. Lisa left him to shuffle paperwork, electronically, of course, and he left her to run the 200-odd men and women who made up the military strength of the base, engineers, technicians, astronauts, soldiers. It was a wise arrangement. The HSS man dealt with numbers, while Lisa handled the real work. With the solar storm raging, though, there was very little real work being done. Lisa had called in everyone from the surface. Huddled safely in the caverns and tunnels deep underground, there was little for the military to do, other than routine maintenance of equipment and that oldest of all soldierly pursuits, griping. In truth, Lisa herself felt uncomfortable burrowed down like a mole in its den. Even though she seldom went to the surface of Vesta, it unnerved her to realize that she could not go up to the surface now, could not get out of these cramped little compartments carved out of the asteroid's rocky body, could not stand up on the bare, pebbled ground, even in a spacesuit, and see the stars. She paced slowly along the consoles in the base command center, looking over the shoulders of the bored technician sitting at each desk. The storm was weakening, she saw. Radiation levels were beginning to decline. Good, she thought. The sooner this is over, the better. 4 HSS vessels were hanging in docking orbits up there, waiting for the radiation to recede enough so they could begin shuttling their crews down to the base. And Doric Harbin was approaching in his ship, Samarkand. Doric had been distant for weeks now. Perhaps it was time to bring him closer. Lisa smiled inwardly at the thought. He doesn't like the fact that I outrank him, she knew. But a few of the right pills, and he'll forget all about rank. Or maybe I should try something that will make him obedient, submissive. No, she decided. I like his passion, his ferocity. Take that away from him, and there's nothing special left. Unidentified vehicle approaching, said the tech monitoring the radar. Lisa felt her scalp tingle. Anything that the radar could spot through this radiation cloud must be close, very close. 2 bogeys, the technician called out as Lisa hurried to his chair. They were speeding toward Vesta, and so close that the computer could calculate their size and velocity. Too small to be attack ships, Lisa saw, swiftly digesting the numbers racing across the bottom of the display. Nukes? Nuclear bombs couldn't do much damage to us while we're buttoned up down here. For the first time, she felt grateful for the solar storm. They're going to impact, said the technician. Yes, I can see, Lisa replied calmly. The 2 approaching missiles fired retro rockets at the last instant and hit the hard, stony ground almost softly. A crash landing, she thought. No explosion. Timed fusing? She walked a few paces to the communications console. Do you have a camera in the vicinity where those 2 bogeys landed? The ComTech already had the scene on her main display screen. It was grainy and dim, but Lisa saw the crumpled wreckage of 2 small missiles lying on the bare ground. Is that the best magnification you can get? She asked, bending over the technician's shoulder to peer at the screen. The technician muttered something about the radiation up there as she pecked at her keyboard. The display went blank. Nice work, Lisa sneered. It shouldn't have done that, said the technician defensively. Radar's out, called the radar tech. Lisa straightened up and turned in his direction. Radiation monitors have gone dead. No response from the surface camera at the crash site, the comm tech said. Hey, 2 more cameras have gone out. Lisa turned slowly in a full circle. Every console was conking out, screens going dark, while red failure mode lights flared. What's going on up there? Lisa asked. No one answered.
No less than 14 Humphreys Space Systems employees attended Martin Humphreys between his burned-out mansion and the finest suite in the decaying Hotel Luna, 4 flights above the fire-blackened grotto. Flunkies and lackeys ranging from his personal physician to a perky blonde administrative assistant with a brilliant smile from HSS's personnel department were already waiting for the CEO as Quinlan and his surprise partner helped Humphreys through the temporary airlock and into Cellini's bottommost corridor. The head of his security department, the never-smiling Grigor, fell into step alongside Humphreys as they started toward the powered stairs. Your assistant, the woman Farrar. What about her? Humphreys asked, suddenly worried that Victoria had survived the fire and was ready to tell the